Okay, my returning guest on Podcasting Softly. He's my final guest for 2019. I'm very happy to have the man, the legend here to talk about his book, Matthias Hughes. He's back. Last time we talked, he was doing Showdown in Manila. And so it's been a bit of a while, but I did see, because I did speak to Alex about it, was Maximum Impact. You look like you had a lot of fun on Maximum Impact.
Yes, it was Maximum Fun.
Shooting it.
You know, it was in Moscow. So Moscow is internationally, it's a huge city, has a lot of history. It was summer, outside a lot. I had no idea. It's like going to Paris or New York or London, you know.
Yeah.
It's a vibrant city, and no wonder a lot of people use it for movies.
Yeah, I was very surprised.
A lot of movies are shot there.
Yeah, I was very surprised because, you see a lot of American movies and European movies, but not a lot of movies shot, you know, in and around the area. So it looked incredible. I love the, you know, you got to change your wardrobe quite a bit in this movie. I mean, we're talking about shirtless in Hollywood, but in that movie, Matthias, you went through quite a few, you were a man in disguise, costume changes.
Yeah. That was the characters, you know, they were like this bumbling idiots trying to kidnap someone and, you know, constantly trying to blend in.
Yeah.
I thought Mark Dacascos was really funny, you know.
Yeah.
I played a psychic, so he's a born comedian, I tell you that. So his dance scenes and all that was pretty funny. But, you know, the movie, it didn't do that well, you know.
Oh.
It was such an expensive movie. We had a great director.
Yeah.
Who's done a lot of big A movies. And it kind of like, poof, disappeared. I don't know what happened.
Which is a shame because Alex sent me the DVD and all that sort of thing. But it was, I mean, it's good. The movies he seems to like to make are those throwbacks to the 80s, 90s action movies, which you were very experienced
in. I think so, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It's still a market. If you do it right, it's still a market. You know, a lot of people still miss it. I feel like it's our generation, you know, the ones who are 40, 45, 50. We all grew up with that. And that's a diehard fan type group, you know. I noticed that right now there is Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, you know, millions of platforms. We don't have DVDs anymore. We don't go to the Blockbusters, or we don't go to the DVD store. So there's so much product right now, especially with Netflix, right?
Mm.
So a lot of the new generation doesn't have movie stars that much anymore. So in the old days, our days, there were a bunch of bad guys. Now it's like maybe, it's like The Rock, really, seriously.
Mm.
Vin Diesel, you know, it's getting smaller and smaller. And soon there will be just faceless people on Netflix doing vampire movies.
Yeah.
And I think that diehard people still want to see that personality involved acting, faces they grew up with, you know, that type. So, yeah, I believe you can actually go back and shoot many more movies, you know, keep up to 50 if you want.
Yeah.
People still watch, I would.
Yeah, oh, totally. And that's what makes particularly these last couple that you've done with Alex and Mark and that whole core group.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different, I mean, I can see why it doesn't translate as well as it used to, because today's audiences are used to a different kind of action movie, where these movies and the movies that you've done in the past, even though they were action movies and genre movies, they were more character driven than purely action and special effects driven.
Right.
And all of you guys play a character. Like, even though in Maximum Impact you're Mark Dacascos's sidekick, you're still your own character. You're not just the big tall guy standing next to him, you know.
Right. But in a way, and I wish I could convey this to people more. So that was an ambitious project. We had an A-list director. And I think what people do miss on these particular films, that even Maximum Impact or Showdown Manila, what was better in the previous movies that we've done, there was a giant battle at the end. So you always have to have that big battle. You cannot shortcut. We don't have time. We don't have this. Before, we took 1 week time, like Karate Tiger, No Retreat, No Surrender, or Kickboxer, where we just shot two final fights. You know what I mean? You built the enemy, you built the bad guy, you built the villains up so much, you hate him so much. And first, the villain always got to destroy the hero to pulp him.
Yeah, humiliate him, right? Yeah.
And then in the end, it's got to be the hero has to overcome all these little obstacles and this and that. So that's the general formula. And it's not always there anymore. So
no.
I can only advise, if someone does it, don't shortcut on the fight scenes in the end. Just really go all out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Maximum Impact. I wanted to go all out, believe it or not. We had that location only short. And he said, oh, we have Mark to fight. We have you to fight. And you're ready. Okay, here we go. You know, it's nothing I can do. I wish, you know, I could have done the major battle in between. And then once he's already almost demolished, he has to still fight Mark. And Mark pulls the last thing out of, you know, Alexander Nevsky. They even cut fight scenes out.
Really?
You wonder
that's
why.
Odd.
You
know, because it could have, like you said, it could have been good. It could have been like that Bruce Lee movie Game of Death, where he's got to fight his way up the pagoda. You know what I mean?
This is exactly what I think. And same in Showdown Manila. Again, people don't, I mean, you never say I almost won the Olympics and then I fell and tripped. But it's the same there. We were in the jungle and it was raining all the time. And the location was so far away from the hotel. So everything was not working out the way Mark could have had a grip on it, in terms of that these fights could have been much more extensive.
Yeah,
like Kerry Tagara, for instance, the bad guy, showed up Manila. You know, you would expect him to be surrounded by an army later, that it's a fight to the death. But again, it's logistics sometimes, you know. So the thing is, in the old days, real quick, you have to understand, we had more time and more money.
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
Now it's
so
now it's like half the money, half the time.
Half everything. Really, I mean, No Retreat, No Surrender was shot for 4 or 5 million or something. Now it's a million and a half, you know,
And you were in Thailand quite a while too, weren't you? As opposed to probably the last couple of movies you did there, you know. So it's, But anyway, talking about, let's talk about it. Shirtless in Hollywood is an incredible book. It's an incredible life that you've lived. It's an incredible life that you've lived. It might make a good movie one day. I don't know who they'd get to play you. Probably Dolph Lundgren. But it would be interesting.
That'd be funny, yeah.
But it's full of great pieces. So I thought, rather than ask you sort of the quintessential, like, the you know, questions, I've sort of gone through and I've picked out little bits, because we might be here forever if we talk all about it, because it's a lengthy story.
Yeah.
So it's a life story. It's your life story, your career story, all that kind of thing. But to kick it off, one of the first things that I read, that these are things that sort of jumped out at me. It's like, did you know there are exotic rulers in the world that keep deadly secrets and harbor wealth that everyday people can't imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a different take on Hollywood or that kind of, you know.
Yeah. The take is literally that when you're an Hollywood actor, you get invited to certain countries that most people don't know of, that have leaders that are dictators, rulers, and they have wealth beyond anything you can ever imagine. And once you land in a country like that, you're not a free person, even if you're invited. It's very scary to be in a country of a dictator. And there's a lot of things going on that you can sense, and you're not allowed to do certain things. I mean, I can tell you a lot of stories, you know. It's like a movie. It's like, oh, okay, we live in Queensland, I live in Bali, I live here in the States. I had no idea this totalitarianism, help me say that again,
totalitarianism.
Oh my God, totalitarianism.
Yeah.
No, I say terrorism. Anyway, it does exist in certain countries.
It's something that jumped out early, because really, I mean, Shirtless in Hollywood, I mean, this is just my point of view, but it really has two. It's a title with a double meaning. It literally means you came to Hollywood with, you know, shirtless, like with nothing. But then you've kind of had to flourish there because of not because that you're not a good actor or a great performer, but it is all about the look too. And you have been cast a lot based on your physique and your appearance and all. So it had is that right? Is that the reason you went with that title?
Yeah, I went with that title because two reasons, just exactly how you said it. You come with nothing, the shirt on your back, literally. You have really nothing. And then you find out the best way to make your money is without the shirt. my first jobs were so stupid, but it's like the bodybuilder on Venice Beach and Dragnet with Tom Hanks, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Dan Aykroyd. The next one was a T-Series. Again, bodybuilder in Speedos, even. Muscle, you know? That's how you sort of realize, okay, there might be a market for me, you know. And you work out at Gold's Gym, there's Hulk Hogan, there's all these other big muscle guys, 80s, bigger, better deal. So you had an actual shot at it. And that was shirtless in Hollywood, you know, you become shirtless in Hollywood.
Yeah.
There's actually two different shots that you had back then, to be larger than life or to be flexible like Van Damme. With a world champion title.
Okay, right.
One or the other. So the shirtless muscle guy like myself would always be the bad guy, and they would have the new guy, the new Van Damme, you know, Michael Worth or whatever, you know, all these great, fantastic fighters, Don Wilson. They needed guys like me, shirtless.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. And I made sure every film is, hold on. Don't you want me to take my shirt off? And they said, yeah, but how? I said, don't worry, I know how to take my shirt off.
like Craig R. Baxley, who directed you, actually quoted him in the book, you know, if anyone's going to take their shirt off, it's going to be Matthias because he has the most muscles.
That was one of my favorite days because I couldn't believe it. I mean, we talk about Dolph Lundgren, you know, he was, for me, in the 80s, the most iconic figure I've ever seen in my life in Rocky IV. No one in the world has ever seen anything like it,
right,
to be honest, right? So, I was so intimidated by all of it, you know, and then the director saying that. I was like, oh, okay.
Does it...
Not too sharp.
Does it never really changes, does it? Like, even the older you get and the more... The longer your career goes on, the longer your career goes on, you never get that never really leaves you, does it? Like this was the first person, like from where you're from originally, who made it
big, right?
And he becomes like the bar for you. Like, okay, well, if he can do it, so can I. Does that ever change, or does it? You know, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. Now I'm 60, so Dolph is 60. We're all the same age. Van Damme, 60-ish. That bar's been already taken by others now, you know. So, like, for instance, I saw The Rock coming up, and there was nothing anyone could do, you know. So, because we get older, so he's now in that age where I was peaking.
Yeah.
And I look over, and I would love to fight The Rock, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't think physically, I'm not sure. I might be able to, but maybe not. I don't know. And, you're still trying to hang in there as long as you can, ironically enough, you know, which is kind of stupid. But what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? It's no one's ever going to cast anything else unless I make a project myself. And that'd be like Jim Carrey doing action movies. Who gives a shit, right? you know what I mean?
I tell you what, I wouldn't mind seeing a series like that. You just did a bunch of Matthias Hughes action movies, and it's just you, the big head on the poster, but it's a different story, but it's the same story. And you just, do like a series of just action movies, you know? I mean, why not? I mean,
yeah. I mean, look at Liam Neeson. I never forget it as long as I live. I'm a big fan of Liam Neeson. I think we all are.
Right,
the Taken movies just took me. Yeah. So. And then it helped me to get over all of that anxiety because I saw him at Ellen DeGeneres and he had to take his shirt off and was sitting, you know, in this water cage where you throw the balls.
Yeah.
And it was horrible to look at, all of it, you know. And I thought, if he can look like that, shit, why do I even worry about, you know, continuing having a six-pack and big arm?
Right.
You know, I mean, you can do taken any other way, but no one will give you a chance at that. You have to create it yourself, and that these days is not that easy. I'm not a producer,
yeah.
You know. But I tell you one thing, just has nothing to do with shirtless, but
yeah.
there's a slight chance. I write scripts now, so
right.
Because I love the business so much that over the last 15 years, you just learn it because I'm in the business, so I know all. I know script writing, I know reading scripts, I know script writing, I put a lot of work in it. So we just approached MGM, and they're actually interested. They're going to read Dark Angel, the sequel, I Come in Peace. I just finished the script, and I wrote it for Dolph and myself.
Right.
And I wrote it for Dolph as Dolph now.
Right, as
he is now, and I survived. But I've been held in a black side in Sweden, and I'm completely damaged, as you can imagine, you know. So, and Ulf is by now 61, sheriff, he's a sheriff in Texas, and he's been placed there because he keeps mumbling about aliens, and the government doesn't want him to ever, you know, surface with this bullshit story about aliens. And long story short, we're going to be reunited in Sweden, you know, when I break out that black side. And, but it's real. Written really age appropriate, but with tons of action, and more aliens, and him having a partner. He has to partner up in Sweden, who is like a Dolph lookalike, but younger.
Right.
So, you know, it's these type of films, I think we have a shot of humanizing ourselves, still kick ass, still be the tough guy, but age appropriate. So, and I'm sure Dolph will like the script, so I had already a couple meetings. MGM is very interested, so all we need is MGM to nod off the script, and we might have I Come in Peace 2 with tons of action with two 60-year-old action guys that will still kick some ass.
I'm sold, Matthias. Take all my money. I'll go and see that. I'll go and see that next week when it opens. That's fantastic. You heard it here first, folks. Dark Angel 2, or I Come in Peace 2, whichever they decide to go with. Depends what part of the world you're in. It was Dark Angel or it was I Come in Peace.
Right.
But, that kind of thing will still fly because anything today that has a built-in audience, right?
I think so.
Even if it is even if it's a cult film like I Come
like
in Peace.
Like all the other, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's got legs. And, of course, if Dolph decides he wants to do it, then that's a different story too.
I wrote it for Dolph. I wrote it with him in mind. I know Dolph. I know he. There's no way he would not want to do this movie. I know it.
Yes.
For me, you know, we are that generation that how many billions of people in the world? There must be at least 40 million people that would still remember this movie or something,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Worldwide. So, yeah, it has some legs.
Yeah, no, I think... I think it's a great idea, and I hope that Dolph, if Dolph ever listens to this, Dolph, just do it, just do it.
Please do it for all of us.
Yeah, do it for all of us. Do it for the world. Matthias is here ready to get it on. He's got his long blonde hair back. You just need the contacts in your eyes, you know, make you...
And obviously
the black trench coat and all that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Right.
And
all
you're,
of that.
You're ready to go. You don't really need to do anything. You're kind of...
I'm ready. I'm leaving today, actually.
You're locked. You'll be on set. You'll be on set at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Right, with my iPhone. Don't worry.
Speaking about Dolph, there was a great chapter where you had one of the first times you met him at a dinner, and you asked him about Masters of the Universe. Could you tell the audience a little bit about that dinner?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't invited to dinner. I was just at Gold's Gym.
Yeah.
And what the manager, who is a stuntman, Derek Barton, he said, well, you know, just go to Rebecca's, which is a celebrity restaurant in Venice. And I heard Dolph is having a dinner reservation at 7 o'clock. Just go. Just say, hi, I'm Matthias. I also am a big man. I want to be in your movie. So I went there and stood there outside with the people not getting in. And then, so his limo shows up and Dolph gets out. First time I see him in my life, 6'5", hair up to here, you know, cigar, bodyguard. And my knees buckled, you know, that's Hollywood power versus someone that just arrived in Hollywood sleeping at that time on the floor somewhere, you know. It's just like, you know, can't lie to yourself, you know who you are. Anyway, so I did ask him, pushed my way through, blocked him, because we same height, so. And he wasn't too friendly, and he was kind of put off that anyone would even stop him. And I said, yeah, I would have been an actor. No, all the right, I said all the wrong things, you know. And he looked at me, rightfully so, because who the fuck, I mean, you can't just walk up and say, can I be in your movie? That's not how you do it. I didn't know. And he said, yeah, well, you know, maybe you can be my stand-in, which is obviously someone that is not an actor, but stands there when they adjust the camera and resting. But then he took a good look up and down and he said, nah, maybe you're not tall enough. But there's this other guy from Germany, Rolf Müller, who wasn't glad either. He's taller, he should do it.
And he pushed me aside.
Yeah. So that was my first introduction to what an idiot I am. But how Hollywood doesn't work.
How it doesn't work.
And we all have the right to be stupid. Or you got to learn. How would you know these things? If you're doing the same things over and over again, that's insanity. You know, you have to listen and learn and adjust. Yeah, you got to adjust to the rules. You know, got to audition, get an agent, get headshots, learn the language, get a green card, get a job.
Exactly, And like you say, I mean, this book is full of... This book is... As much as it is a autobiography and a career overview, it is kind of a cautionary tale too, because you know what it's like to sleep on floors, and you know what it's like to have to buy a car for under $500, and you know what it's like to say, well, $296 an hour isn't going to buy me an apartment, and you've done the hard yards. You know what it's like at the top of the mountains and also at the bottom of the valley, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why...
But it's so normal. I mean, I think anyone can do it. If you're young, you can do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Resilience, then.
It's unbelievable how powerful you are in your 20s. You just don't know. If I would have known it, I've done it. So I would do it again.
Yeah.
I would do it again.
Because you have a lot of stupid courage back then, you know, when you're young.
Yeah.
And you're not as standoffish, like, you know, I'll go up to Dolph Lundgren and talk to him. Like, you know, because you don't know the politics yet.
No.
You don't know the politics yet.
You know what, I had almost 800 pages in this book. I have so many stories I had to unfortunately cut out.
Yeah.
Because you can't print a book that size, you know, Amazon won't let you. And there's so many freaky stories of what happens to you when you land with your 2 feet in Hollywood and you don't know your way around. Insane. The people I got hooked up with who tried to use me or how to get to places. Oh, my God. Some of it's so embarrassing and some of it stupid. But you know nothing if you don't do it. Now, if I think back, Hollywood is so big, it's so hot, it's so frustrating. I mean, if you have no car, no phone, I used to walk, like, for hours just to ask someone, can I work there, just even carry cables in the film. I mean, today I wouldn't even be able to do this anymore. It's just crazy. You have to be so hungry, you know, hungry.
Ravenous, yeah. I've got to say, Matthias, one of my favorites. one of my favorite stories in the book. And if you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to. But
I talk about everything.
And this is a direct quote. There I was in the land of dicks with a woman over 6 feet tall, with muscles like Lou Ferrigno.
Oh yeah.
And throwing me onto her bed and ripping off my clothes. Now. I haven't seen you. I've never seen you in person. I've only seen you in movies. I've only seen photographs. But you are visibly an imposing person. I can only imagine a female of your equal taking you on,
yeah,
or taking you out, so to speak. I mean, yeah, that's, yeah, it's crazy.
It's a Quentin Tarantino move, yeah, moment.
Yeah.
For real. This is for real. This woman is legitimately as big as me. And not as tall, but 6 foot. So, but you have to understand, it's a woman, so you're not going to hate a woman or anything.
No,
so
no.
There is a moment you let her overpower you because they're equally as strong. I work out with women like that. So
yeah,
they do three more reps when I'm already throwing up. So in that particular field, they are way stronger. However, you could handle a woman like that, I guess. You just don't want to. And I've never seen anything like it. If I tell you that every inch of that room was plastered with what you just said, it's the truth.
Yeah.
And when you see this, when you walk in with someone that big who is that horny and you walk in, it is so shocking. It is so shocking. I don't know how women feel when they're raped or something. You know, I guess it's the same.
Yeah.
It's incomprehensible.
Yeah,
because
what I gather from it, you were not ready. I mean, you were not ready for what was waiting for you inside that house.
I was never ready for this, as long as I live. I mean, no one would be ready for this.
No.
No one.
I mean, and just like you said, and you used the Me Too thing in the book there. Now, we hear a lot, and on the news there is a lot about from the female's perspective, point of view. But there aren't too many,
and there's
been a few, like Terry Crews came out and talked about his encounters.
Oh, yeah.
But this is real, and there is this side of it, too, that doesn't get talked about a lot, and that's from males being harassed like this.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot. It is real, and it
happens more often than you think.
Yeah. It works both ways, yeah. It works both ways. Mm. Literally the same. Maybe there's more women in the business that access. You just don't hear much by men, right?
No.
Women, you hear all the time. Yeah, I guess men don't talk about it.
No.
I hear so many stories, and I'm like, "What? This can't be true. Oh, this guy, that guy." You know.
Until
same with women.
Until like yourself. Until it happens to you, for real.
Oh yeah. Then someone approaches you, and you're like, "Oh, okay, that." So it is true. One thing I noticed, and I always say that with Weinstein and all the other people that were sexually abused, so they say, unless you're a good actor or actress, it won't help you. So let's just say that's the route you went, for whatever reason, you still have to be good.
Yeah, sure.
Meaning, you know what I mean? Yeah. So you have to have something in your career that stands out. So how do you get there? That's your everyone has to think about it.
How
am I going to get there? There's millions of ways to get there, and then one day you do wake up. You know, I've been blacklisted in town a few times, not because of Me Too movements,
no,
because of I fought the wrong people for the most stupidest things. And yeah, there's such a thing. So we live in a very dominant world of power that you better learn how to maneuver around it.
Yeah.
Especially in Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Yeah. Can't say the wrong thing.
No. Yeah, and you have to be careful. From what I gather, because I come from a small town, politics is very much the politics of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Everyone knows everybody. You've got to be careful.
Humans are humans. So even in a small building, you will have the same politics as in a village, and a village is a country.
Mm.
It's always the same. You know, you can't get, if you got to learn to be socially adept, socially intelligent.
Yeah.
Don't say stupid things, or, you know, if you don't have anything to say, if you don't have anything good to say, maybe better say nothing, you know.
Hey, yeah, what our mothers tried to teach us a long time ago, hey, you got nothing nice to say, probably not to speak at all.
Yeah.
Hey. You know, but unfortunately, because it is show business, show off. It's a business because all of these films cost money, and this money has to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
Even as something that sounds like such a sure thing as I Come in Peace too, you know, like because
it would be,
you know, all the elements are there for success, even if it wasn't made for a massive budget. There's enough of cult status there to make it profitable, but it could go the other way.
You have to explain?
It could go the other way.
You have to, yes. I want to give you a very quick example. So for 20 years, I've been trying to get a producer interested, but I just didn't know how to get to them, so to speak, because no one knew as the rights.
Right.
And I have a friend who is a doctor. He does cryogenics, and one of his clients is one of the bosses at MGM, and he just simply mentioned it to him, and he was, oh yeah, I'll take a look at it. It was like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's who you know, it's very difficult unless you know the right people. Fraternism, friendship, that's why people smoke cigars, play golf, ride horses together, whatever it takes, you have to be in that circuit. And it's not always easy because it's a huge circuit.
Oh, sure.
How would I know the head of MGM?
Exactly. Unless you accidentally bumped into him and says, hey, it's Matthias Hughes. Hey, what do you do, mate? Oh, I'm the head of MGM. I'm the head of MGM.
Yeah. happened to me before. One of the biggest film companies starts with M. They're out of business now.
Oh,
anyway,
okay. Not Miramax, no.
Miramax.
Yeah.
Head of Miramax comes to me in the gym. Oh, I love your movies. I'm a fan. Especially I Come in Peace. And I'm out. And then he left. But, you know, it's like, it does happen, you know. So
yeah.
The right people, but what are you going to do? I wrote some stuff in the book, I think, with Jerry Bruckheimer. Did I write that in the book?
Jerry Bruckheimer.
Stuff like that, yeah. So the gym I work out part-time, you know, where I live, has so many A-listers like that.
I know.
Wouldn't believe it, you know, and you just, you're dying to just go, hey, Jerry, what's up? You know, Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, what the fuck? I mean, you know, look at me, you know.
Yeah.
But you can't do it, then he won't do it. He will not put you in.
No.
He just can't do it. It's so frustrating almost, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You would have to. And they always, I'm not a sports trivia person. It's so funny. All these people in that gym talk about the last baseball games or basketball, and I have no clue about it or football.
Right.
And I mean, the only way for me to get in is like, hey, you know, oh, what about that goal and this and that? But I just don't know how to speak that language, so to speak. So I always thought, damn, I have to learn more about American football or something, you know.
Just read the sports pages on the way to the gym, so that way you've got a little heads
right.
up, you know, walking in, like, hey, what about those dolphins?
Jerry, come here for a second, you know, listen, eh?
Yeah, what about that pass? I mean, the dolphins, you know.
Yeah,
tremendous.
Can you, man? Yeah. So how about your movie, Jerry? How about your movie?
I've got to admit that I would probably be even more klutzy and stupid than I am already if I was in close proximity with you guys, because I grew up watching you. I don't know you, I feel like I do, sort of, you know, in a strange way, because I've seen so many performances, watched all the movies, the TV, everything. To be like, if we met like at a cafe or at an airport or a restaurant or whatever, I couldn't help myself. I mean, I just,
right.
you know,
yes.
like for me right now, like this is like a childhood fantasy. Like,
if you
were to go back 20 years and tell me like one day I would be sitting with this technology what we have right now. Talking with Matthias Hughes at lunchtime here, I'd say go and have another drink.
I get it. Because whenever I meet someone famous, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my god, that's the guy.
that's that guy. You know.
Yeah. The other day, I was sitting with Arnold in the cigar room, and he was talking and telling us all these stories, and I was like, I'm sitting here with Arnold.
Exactly. And you're like, that's the Terminator. That's Conan the Barbarian.
It was really cool because I was 12 or 15 when I saw him in Commando or something like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? That was so impressionable for me.
Yeah.
And he looks just like like in the movies. You know, he looks at you like straight through you. You know, it's almost like, is he gonna kill me now or something? You know, it's like he's got it down. I gotta tell you, this man got it down. He's good.
And you talk about that a lot in the book too. And we've talked about we've touched on it as we've been talking before. But you talk about being in places where you network, and you talk a lot about the Rose Cafe, is it? That's a big hangout.
Yeah.
For,
and
the
Rose
pictures
Cafe.
Of you, Alex is there, and Rolf, and does Arnold hang out there too sometimes, or not?
No, everything changed. So what happened is Rose Cafe was a place next to Gold. Is a place next to Gold.
Oh, it is next to Gold.
Arnold, yeah. Right next to it, and Arnold had his office next door.
Okay.
So him and Sven Olsen, Ralph Möller, Oliver Stone, many, many people.
Wow.
Went down. Yeah, I would sit there every morning and have their coffee and smoke cigars. And I was too intimidated. I just sat in the front looking, wow, these are the big boys. No.
Yeah.
Well, as it is, you know, and then I was still struggling, and then Van Damme is coming with this big Mercedes, you know, and I was like, wow, that's the big time, you know, that's the big roller. Didn't think I would be able to sit there one day, but that's normal, you know. But a lot of people sat there who weren't famous because Arnold liked bodybuilders. He liked big guys because that's his life. I wrote in the book, I was just not, I thought, okay, so in one way I want to be like them, in another way, but I don't want to be like them just knowing them, you know, kind of a weird feeling. I wanted to make my own way.
Exactly.
I still don't, and then once I had the same agent, I never forget the day when I did I Come in Peace and I had all the big Asians, same as Arnold and everyone. And Van Damme comes to me at Gold's Gym and said, welcome to the family, you know, I just saw your movie. You're going to be the next so-and-so. And I thought, oh, okay. Now I'm going to sit with him.
Now I won't just sit near him. I'll actually talk to him a little bit, too. I thought it was great that you wrote that you were at one time constantly being mistaken for Fabio.
Yeah, can you believe it?
I can't believe it's not butter, right?
It's not butter. I heard this so many times that it would drive me bonkers, because Fabio wasn't an actor, and you know, it's just for me that was just a completely different guy. And I actually auditioned a few times, and they said, "Oh, Fabio was just there," and I thought, "Oh, now he wants to be an actor," you know.
I wonder if he often got. I wonder if he got mistaken for Matthias Hughes.
I don't think so. No. He was so famous at that time. I can't even explain it to you. He was. The people that really liked him knew him, you know, the girls. I liked him. He's a very nice guy. I know him. And he was so famous that that restaurant where he had breakfast every morning, you couldn't get a table unless you're a hot chick, you know. There were all girls from all around the world wanting to meet him.
Fabulous.
And when I walked in there, there was no mistaking that they didn't think I'm Fabio. It's more like out there, you know, where people never really paid much attention. They just, the imagery of the long hair and the muscles.
Exactly, yeah. You're tall, blonde hair, muscles.
Yeah.
You must be
funny. Like my favorite, Alexander Gordonov, who also had long blonde hair.
Yes, yeah.
And was a dancer. Yeah. So everywhere, even last month, I'm sitting there with a general consul from Indonesia in Los Angeles talking about movies. And he said, one of my favorite movies of yours is Die Hard. And I'm like, should I say yes or no? You know, because what am I going to do? It's 30 years later. Everyone says, my favorite movie with you is Die Hard.
Yeah.
I thought, this is crazy. It's 30 years later, they still say it.
Yeah. You know, but is it a great trap? Is it a great trap in Hollywood to look too much like someone else and therefore be typecast for the parts that they don't want?
Oh, you never want to look like anyone else.
Yeah.
Never. Never. Luckily, I didn't have that problem because, like I said, Fabio was not an actor. Alexander Gordonov died
very
early.
Very young.
Yeah, so very young. Yeah. And he was in those circles, he was known as a character actor already. You know, he did a movie with Harrison Ford, The Witness.
Yeah. Ironically, you both did a movie with Tom Hanks in it.
Oh, really? What did you
do? Yeah, he did.
I was an extra.
He was in The Money Pit with Tom Hanks, and you were, of course, in Dread with Tom Hanks. So there you go. So maybe that's how people got confused, because he was actually in a movie with Tom Hanks as well. So there you go.
He was actually an actor in it. I was an extra in it.
He played a very comedic part, which is different, because really if you look at the small roles that he had before he passed, he played the gamut. He played a comedy. He was obviously very serious in Die Hard. But then he played like an Amish guy in Witness.
He did such a great job.
Yeah.
And he looked like an Amish guy.
Yeah.
And that's pretty hard to pull off for a Rush. Not necessarily, but amazing.
Yeah.
It's so sad how Hollywood takes people away, you know?
Yeah. But
alcoholism.
I mean, you talked a lot about dealing with anxieties as your career progressed, and like I said you've seen highs and lows, extreme lows and extreme highs, like never just can now that you look back, obviously having written this book, was there ever a time where there was smooth sailing? Like there seems peaks and valleys, but was there ever a time in your career where there was everything was just going fine, like not great, not bad, but
at least 10, 12, maybe 15 years just unbelievable.
I mean,
couldn't have a better life. You cannot imagine that life. Yeah. I cannot even imagine it anymore.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I could not go anywhere. I was always first in line. Never had to valet park my car. Everything for free. Champagne. Wherever I went. It was crazy, crazy. A long, 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 beautiful ride.
Yeah.
But it came to an end when everything came to an end, you know, in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
There's nothing you could do. And still I had a great life.
Yeah.
Even, I'm telling you, with all these adventures that I wrote, you have no idea how much fun that is. I lived in all these countries. I was always famous, meaning people always know who I am. All these parties, all these amazing people I meet, all these precarious situations. For me, that was like living the life. Who lives like that? You know?
Exactly.
All that stuff is insane. It hasn't even stopped.
No.
What I do currently, I'm doing so many things. You know, my life is so interesting.
Yeah.
It never stopped.
Yeah, and I mean, it's in a strange way, would you say that in trying to become part of this world of the movies, your life becomes like a movie.
It is like a movie.
Yeah.
It's because you take really incredible chances, you know. So I already have new plans for new adventures.
Yeah.
I might wanna. Yeah. I will tell you later if it works out.
Okay.
Crazy shit.
All right.
Crazy shit. Yeah. So, but all good stuff. All good
all
stuff.
All good.
So,
wow. That's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Everything is always entertainment oriented. I can't give up. You know, it's a fine line because sometimes I think, okay, so I could just live in Bali, you know, do nothing, or I'm going to go full out. I'm still going full out. Yeah.
Getting ready for the next big push.
The next
big phase, like Marvel. You're going into phase five or phase six or whatever.
Yeah.
But
a lot has to do with I Come in Peace, because a lot of things come together with that movie. It gives me much more power to do other things that I want to do.
Yeah.
I have so many scripts and connections around the world. People want to do things on the highest levels. Like I said, as an actor, you get to, I was just sitting with the General Counsel of Indonesia talking how we're going to do movies in Indonesia and stuff like that. You know, I always have the most amazing opportunities because people have seen you over the years and they want Hollywood so badly to come to their world.
Sure.
And with that, you know, there's so much you can do.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful, look, it's a beautiful country, beautiful locations. There's no reason why you can't make a lot of great films over there.
Yeah.
And hey, look, if you need a screenwriter, I'll put my hand up, and you know my number.
Okay.
You know my number now.
Yeah.
Just give us a whistle. Say, hey, Kent, you got any good ideas for an action movie? I do. I got lots. I got
good. Yeah, we talked about that before.
Yeah,
remember? Yeah. You never can have enough ideas because
endless ideas for movies, mate. And you can be the star of all of them. I will totally write vehicles for you for the rest of your life if you want to.
That'd be great.
Yeah. We'll make a little industry here in Southeast in Oceania,
Yeah.
Close to Australia, we could do an outback one as well. You can come over here and do it.
Did you happen to be able to go to the location of Aquaman? Was that like something people could check out in interviews and stuff?
Yeah, totally. On the coast, like, granted, a lot of it was filmed with green screen and all that sort of stuff. But on that northern coast there, I mean, it's beautiful country. You just need to turn the camera on and you've got exotic locales. Like where you are now, like just looking at the photos in the book of just where you're at right now, it's beautiful. It's paradise.
It's right, yeah. It's really nice, yeah. It's ripe for the taking.
Yeah.
It just needs
someone... someone with how do they say it? With a little bit of vision to a little bit of magic and a little bit of money and
we're making time.
Before we go, tell me about your monkey.
Oh, the monkey, Shivo, the monkey.
Yeah.
Is a rescue.
Yeah.
And he's a naughty boy all day long. Can't trust him. I wish I could trust him more, you know. He was totally free for so many years because we were alone in the jungle. There was no one here.
Yeah.
Now we have 10 villas around us, you know.
Villas, yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. So quick. And he just goes to the other villas and steals phones and wallets.
You said you lost your phone. Maybe you didn't. Maybe he's just hidden it somewhere in the house.
You know, he's not a suspect at the moment because we had a huge Christmas party and, like, it's gone, the phone.
Yeah.
But it's still pinning somewhere in the house and we can't find it.
Right.
So we know he can't be the subject because he's outside the house.
Right.
But he would have been the first suspect, usually, yes.
Right.
Yes. But we took him off the list for now.
Yeah, he's not one of the usual suspects. But he might be.
No.
Yeah.
Still narrowing in on family members and.
Fantastic. Listen, Matthias, I wish we were better mates so I could say, that's a beautiful place. I'd like to come around and hang out with you for a while. But
you probably should come.
Who knows?
You know, yeah. To be honest, we turned it into a business now.
Yeah.
And then we'll pack up again and leave and rent it out because you can't live in paradise and. Just do nothing.
Exactly. Especially when you're trying to make the big push. Listen, I hope it all comes together well.
Thank you so much.
Shirtless in Hollywood is a fantastic book. I hope everyone listening to this gets out.
Thank you so much.
And sees it, reads it. It's a tremendous life. It's a tremendous career. The little boy in me that watched you and still watches you in movies. Thanks you very much for this time and the opportunity to read Shirtless in Hollywood. It's really cool. I'm going to ask Matthias, who's now joining
me.
This is my last podcast, I'm softly for the year. Merry Christmas and a happy New Year to everyone. And
same year. Merry Christmas.
Hughes.
Happy New Year.
That's fantastic. How cool is that? You've just had Matthias Hughes wish you a Merry Christmas. And... I'm very grateful to have it, mate. All the best with I Come in Peace, too.
Thank you. Two.
Yeah, two. And let's hope that 2020 is the year.
Exactly. Of
all the good things that you're doing and all the wonderful things that you do now. And I hope that your monkey gives your phone back.
Okay. All right, mate. Thank you so much.
Thanks, mate.
All right, mate.
I'll send you...
Awesome.